Indeed, welcome back. It's the Dom and Colin podcast. I am Colin, back here again to talk more Survivor with Dom. First of all, with Dom. Dom, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing very well. And not only Dom here with us today, joining us for the first time in far too long, one of our great friends from back in the early days of this podcast. You guys, of course, know him from Survivor South Pacific. Welcome back to the show, Albert DeStrada. Albert, how are you?
Doing great, guys. Doing great. Feel so glad to be back on the podcast.
Yeah, no, thank you so much for coming on. We were talking a little bit with you just before we came on air, but I'm sure that people would love to hear what you've been up to these days.
I've been up to I've been playing poker since I left Survivor. I was coaching baseball for a couple of years, and then I moved into playing poker full time. I've been doing that for the better part of 4 years now. And I kind of run one of the bigger private games here in South Florida at one of the casinos. It's a really good game. We have a lot of action. Play just Texas Hold'em, and been playing poker, traveling a little bit for tournaments, but just doing the poker thing, enjoying that and the freedoms kind of come with it.
Yeah. Are you still a regular weekly Survivor viewer?
I am a weekly Survivor viewer. One of the only drawbacks of my schedule, I'm pretty lucky with my poker schedule, but my poker game kind of runs directly against the Wednesday night airing of Survivor. So I don't get to see it live, so I can't do like the tweeting and all that good stuff, but I still watch it regularly every week. I get home every Wednesday night, and I just go immediately to the DVR, and I get the non-commercialed 48-minute or 42-minute, whatever it equates to, product. But yeah, still love the game, still love the show, and I don't miss an episode now.
Awesome. And I guess just quick sidebar that I think people would be interested in hearing as well. Do you still talk to anyone from your cast on South Pacific?
I do. Yeah, I actually so Michaela Wingo, who was on my season with me, was somebody who lived here. And I live in South Florida. I'm in just north of Miami. She was down here for a while. Her and I were pretty good friends for a while. Her and I still communicate pretty regularly. I talk to Coach every now and then. It's funny. I was actually considering doing an event with him at the end of this month up in Reno. It's like Run It Up Reno. An event that a lot of Survivor guys are going to be attending. I won't be able to make it. It's actually the weekend of my birthday, so I had some prior engagements. But I talk to Coach every now and then. We always kind of catch up before the season starts, before the new season airs on TV. Cochran and I were pretty cool for a long time. I hadn't spoken to him in a bit. We kind of lost touch. But he's definitely somebody that I've spoken to a lot over the years outside of the game. Beyond that, I guess Whitney and Keith, we'll exchange some communications with every now and then. They're in Nashville. We were just trying to get together in Vegas. And once I ran into Jim Rice in a poker room. That was we shot the shit a little bit. Jim's a good
typical.
Dude.
You just happened to run into Jim.
Yeah, I'm sitting down playing poker and I see him walk by and I'm like, that's Jim Rice right there. And then he comes over to my table and it's like says hello to me. And he was in town down here in South Florida for a couple of days, staying at the Hard Rock, and we just kind of caught up a little bit.
Well, that's good to hear. So jumping back into the present quickly, have you been liking the season so far? I know last season ended in a bit of a controversial way, and there was a bit of uncertainty coming into this one, but has it met your expectations so far?
Yeah, going into the season, I was excited for the premise. It seemed like a really interesting way to set up, you know, the game of Survivor with, you know, bringing back all the people's or all the former players' mistakes and all that. I've kind of liked it so far. I mean, there's been some exciting things have happened. I will say the fan in me has been a little sad by the eliminations, because some of the players that have been the early boots, I think, could have been really entertaining and really good players. So that's kind of, you know, I always get nervous when you watch a season like Game Changers, for instance. Like, you saw some people leave early that were like really, you know, people that you wanted to see play. So sometimes I feel like as I look at the game as a whole, I get nervous because I'm like, shit, if this person's gone, you know, how is the season going to hold up now without, you know, X or Y person still in? So I'm hoping that this season doesn't necessarily lose steam just because we lost some people that I thought could have been really interesting or good players.
Who are those people for you so far? Or just over the past few seasons, who has really stood out as like the people that you wish we could have seen a lot more from?
From this season specifically, I thought Morgan could have been a really good player. I thought Brendan could have been a really good player. Just the way he spoke, I was like, just as a little sidebar, I have a friend of mine in the poker world who I'll leave anonymous, but is somebody who is going through the application process for Survivor right now and is receiving some level of consideration, who I'm kind of helping coach and prepare for Survivor. And this is like a guy that I was like, this is like just the way he was speaking, this player, Brendan. I was like, this is how you want to speak if you're on Survivor. Like just the language that he chose, I thought was really, really smart. So I wanted to see more from him. Even Jacob, I thought Jacob was really entertaining. I know he didn't really get any footing and was like in hot water out of the gate, but I thought he would have been a really like cool, interesting person to see play Survivor and just see how his Survivor brain plays. In previous seasons, I don't know if other seasons had other than Game Changer. I remember Game Changer specifically was one that I was like, all these big players went out early. But other than that, I can't think of.
No, that's totally fair, and that's often going to be the case in these all-star seasons. Yeah, I'm really curious to hear what you think about Ghost Island and just the fact that this is where we have arrived with just Survivor as a franchise. It really does feel like the last at least 3 or 4 seasons we've been getting. The vast majority of the episodes will have some new idol come into play or some advantage. And I know you said you like just the idea of having these kind of like haunted relics come back and re-enter like the Survivor storylines and so forth. But what do you think just in general of just kind of the direction the show is heading with that in mind and just the onslaught of advantages and twists that seem to be now a fundamental part of every season of Survivor?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question. I think there's two sides to that. I think one side is, and I'm with you, Colin. I think that, the game itself now and its present form and it's at this point, its evolution, there's a little bit, and I feel like I'm speaking for the fan base on this. There's a little bit feeling of like, there's almost too much going on. There's almost too many idols, too many advantages, too much like bonus stuff happening, which can take away a little bit from the raw game, the raw, you know, form of what Survivor was truly about. It wasn't really about, you know, I have all this huge bag of tricks with like 5 different weapons. It was about, you know, the social dynamics. It was about, you know, the strategies. It was about the trust and all that stuff. So I think that can get a little bit overdone in certain ways, but I understand production's, you know, want and desire to mix things up. You know, big moves are, you know, they make good television. They're exciting. They're like, you know, they make a good hashtag. They make a good, like, you know, thing. So I get that aspect. Why I like this specific twist is because Survivor is similar to baseball in some ways, where it's a game where it's like, you know, history matters. You know, it's everything is like, you're always, you know, props will reference things and challenges. Like, you know, this is a Survivor record. You know, people reference Survivor history in the past. So I like that, even though this is a little bit of a gimmicky type, you know, twist, which is we've seen a lot of, but it's one that maybe this is just like speaking my own personal stuff because, you know, I was a former player. I like that they're playing to the, you know, the history of the game and the lore of the game, because it's such a huge body of work. So, you know, 36 seasons, all these players that have played, there's so much data. There's so much volume. There's such a big sample size of information that like the history in this game matters. And the fact that they're making an homage to that history and putting some players on that are familiar with it. I think is a nice touch. So it's I think it's well done in that capacity.
And when they do add those new twists, I think they tend to work when they enhance those basic aspects of the show, like the social and the strategic side. And to use an example which you will be far too familiar with, I think Redemption Island was a bust for a lot of reasons, but one of them was it was kind of a distraction from those from what Survivor's meant to be about. And it did lead to some interesting thoughts, like Survai sending Ozzy on purpose so that he could win and come back in. But by and large, it was 10 minutes of the show every week that wasn't based on the things that we associate with Survivor, and that's why it failed. And I think some of the twists in here this season, we still don't know exactly where it's going to go, but so far I think it is tying into what we love about the show, and so that gives me confidence at least.
Certainly. Yeah, and I like, you know, Dom, speaking of that, I agree with you. Not all twists are made equal. Not all, like, changes are made equal. I agree. Redemption Island necessarily wasn't the best twist, but I like some of the stuff they're doing. Like, I like the fact that they have, like, the twist they make now with the decisions on Ghost Island. That's really interesting to me, where it's like, you can basically gamble, do I want to risk my vote versus do I want an advantage? Like, those kind of twists, I think, are interesting because they don't, like you said, they don't take away from the true core of the game, but they do add a decision-making element, which I think is very interesting for the viewer and for the player.
Yeah, what did you think, actually, of Kellen this week with that decision? Because I think more often than not, we will probably see people on Ghost Island say, it's worth losing my vote or whatever a future penalty is to get this item that could vastly change my position within the game. Kellen here in this spot decides not to end up risking her vote and not jeopardize what is potentially going to be a 5-4 majority that we'll ultimately see come in. That extra vote was the difference maker. It would have been a tie if she wasn't able to vote. Like that idea by her to actually forego the opportunity at some kind of sick prize on Ghost Island?
Oh, yeah. So, okay. So I'm like I'm a weird viewer of the game. And I think this is what makes Survivor so interesting is everyone views or watches the show and the game for their own different reasons and their own things that really excite them. So for me, I liked that she made what I thought was clearly the correct decision by keeping her vote and not risking it. But I know that some people would like enjoy like, no, like gamble, like take the advantage and like possibly mix up the game and possibly complicate things. So for me, I thought that what she did was correct. And I like felt like that was more enjoyable for me to watch, to see a player make a correct or a better decision for themselves and for the game. But, I like that they're putting these players in these spots to like make, you know, out, they have to think outside the box. And these are the kind of things that like not only make the game more interesting, but now like down the stretch, like let's say Kellen makes it really deep into the game. Like she can reference that at some point and say like, listen, I was presented this decision. I made this. And now you have like true clear cut decisions that you can take ownership for that allow you to say like, this is how I paved, you know, my path to the end. This is how I did this, you know, X, Y, and Z. So I think she without a doubt made the right decision. Like, and it's interesting because a lot of these advantages have blown up in people's faces. There's a lot of things that people don't know. Like, you know, Stephen Fishbox talked about a lot of these advantages turn out to be not such an advantage, you know, and that's been some of the flaw in the game where it's like you're giving someone something that's labeled an advantage, but really isn't, because it can really put somebody in a really bad position and a lot of the prior, you know, permutations that we've seen of the advantages. But, basically, like, I think she did the only thing she could do in that spot. I think if the votes weren't that way, if it was, let's say, her, the previous Navidi had like, I don't know, like a 5-3 or something like that, I think I could see her maybe go ahead and taking whatever the mystery advantage would be. But based on the information she had, that was the only decision she could make.
Yeah, it reminds me of how a lot of people talk about poker, where the focus is always on these flashy plays that only come up in super rare spots. And if you want to succeed, what you have to do is focus on the more boring stuff that comes up more frequently. And so this episode, I think the focus for everyone, and I'm sure for us later on, understandably, is going to be that tribal council and Michael's move with the idol. But maybe the best play of the episode, or the most important play, was just Kellen having the self-control to say no. Because I think so many players would have given into temptation there and wanted to go for the advantage, and just not doing that, I think, maybe secured the win at Tribal on behalf of her and her entire group there.
Right. I think even some of the people we would consider like all-time great players, would their general philosophy is like, it's always worth it probably to gamble on Ghost Island, because whatever that item is going to be way better than whatever the downside is. But I think with this exact scenario in mind, if this is this one vote majority, Kellen made, I'm with both of you, the absolutely only defensible move in declining the offer from Ghost Island and making sure that there's no way that majority is going to get overturned here. And I was also going to bring up poker and referencing this of like, Albert, as you know very well, the correct strategy for the vast majority of hands preflop is just fold, get rid of them, because you're far better off not even participating than investing a dime.
Right. And that's what's really like, it makes Survivors kind of tough for a lot of these players. Like they sit at home and they watch these, you know, like these people make these big moves, and the way that like production kind of presents that, it's like, wow, like they took a really, you know, they made a really courageous decision there. And like, it's kind of like, you know, put in this hero kind of like idea, like that's what it takes to win Survivor. You got to do the big things. And then in reality, it's like a lot of times the boring play is the right play. Like, you know, the less flashy move, like Dom said, is often the best move. And in this one, it was 100% it. And I think Kellen might have been one of the, just based on the way she's profiled so far, I think she's one of the players that made that, would have made that correct decision. I don't know if everyone else would have, because she kind of went in there with like that skepticism. She was like already like, oh, this is my biggest fear, drawing rocks. So you could tell she was already risk averse. Like, she's not a risk seeker. If her biggest fear on Survivor was drawing rocks, this isn't the kind of person that's going to want to gamble in that spot. I think even though for us three right here, it seems so clear that that's the best decision, I would be willing to bet that a majority of that cast would not have made the same decision Kellen made, presented in her same spot, even though it seems so clear to us.
So, Albert, when you're out there on the island and you encounter a twist like this, how much of you is trying to second guess the motivations behind it? So, for instance, you go to Ghost Island, you see all those urns lined up. You know, for this twist to work, not all of them can be rewards. Some of them are going to have to be punishments, or however you want to call it. And I'm thinking, like, they need not just someone to crack the urn, get an advantage that they can use to overturn the game, but they also need people to take a risk or like overreach and have it blow up in their face. And the best way for it to blow up is if we have a majority and I give up that majority by sacrificing my vote. So hopefully everything is on the level and it is just a 50-50 chance. But if there is any kind of strategic choice behind it, it's going to be weighted in favor of me making the risky choice and it not going well for me. So does that weigh into anything at all, or do you try and just analyze it more objectively?
That's a really interesting theory. I guess that's likening it to when you're at the Survivor auction and it's like, well, you can bid on this covered item, and some of the covered items are a cheeseburger or a pizza, and then some of them are like, you know, snail droppings or something.
That's
like
a perfect analogy, yeah, for right? Ghost Island. That's great.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is, right? It's like you're like guessing, you're betting on the mystery box, and it's, I guess that's what's so interesting about the Ghost Island twist, and that's why I think in a game that's like been over twisted, I think this, or over like, you know, overly, you know, altered, this might be a really good, like, nice, way to like keep it fresh and keep people making decisions, but not do it too much. I don't know. I'm curious to see what they're going to do down the road, Dom. And I don't know if they're going to really, you know, how much they're going to want people to, because I feel like people going in there are already a little skeptical. They're like, you know, they have all these reminders around them everywhere. Don't mess up, reverse the curse, don't make these mistakes. So I think they have to like kind of make the things on Ghost Island tantalizing enough and make it skewed where it's like, okay, I want to try to take this risk. I don't want to make the mistakes that other did. Like, I think they want to like incentivize people to go for them. So I don't know how much they're going to have negatives, but
yeah, well, I think it would certainly cross my mind if I was in Kellen's position at the very least of like, I would imagine production is rooting for whoever it is, not necessarily just me, but someone to go out there and gamble and lose so that we have a 4-4 vote instead of a pretty clear 5-5
vote. Oh, that's production. Production's dream is to somebody to gamble on something on Ghost Island, it blow up, and now that becomes like a Ghost Island thing. Yeah. Like a terrible mistake is made on Ghost Island. Like, yeah, that's like the dream.
That becomes a mistake that goes on the next edition of Ghost Island, is you reaching for that and it blowing up on you.
Right, yeah. It's kind of like how we all, in whatever fans versus favorites season, there's always going to be some original fan, they were a fan and now they're a favorite. If they ever do another fans versus favorites, someone from that fans tribe will come back as a favorite.
Right. That's like the total home run, like put a big bow on the entire thing productive right there.
Yeah. Well, I wanted to kind of go from the idea of Kellen. I think we were certainly all on the same board, on the same page, excuse me, all on board together that she made the right decision here, but then many others perhaps wouldn't have. And I think out of this cast, the person who to this point is really standing out to me as the next kind of spiritual successor to like Russell or like Tony, or recently we've seen like Joe Mena last season. It seems quite often now it's almost become an archetype of having these hyper aggressive kind of guys out there playing and looking everywhere for idols and just going super hard every time they have a chance, basically, for any kind of political action. What do you think just about that kind of style emerging on Survivor recently, Albert?
So you're talking specifically about Dominic.
Dominic and just, him on this season, but just that type of player in general and what it takes to play that kind of style, if that's even a good idea.
Of course. No, it's funny because as you're describing that archetype, I'm just like, oh, so he's talking about Dominic, who means Dom. Like, yeah,
right, yeah.
Clearly. Like, and what do I think about that style? So when I originally watched Kagayan and I saw Tony Vlachos play, I was like, this guy is a maniac and he's either absolutely insane and going to like flame out, or he's going to play the game in a crazy way and win. And he did that. He played a game in a way that I would never advise anyone to play. And he won, in like remarkable, like stunning fashion. So like, it shows you that this game is so flexible and so malleable where you can do so many creative things. It's almost like, to use a poker analogy, he's like that first super hyper lag that like is just like, you know, I'm just going to put him to a test every single time. I'm
right.
Just
gonna put all
the bets. They just can't call. And then you just see them running people over and you're just like, how is this happening? Like, how is this not? I'll tell you what, I think it's interesting. I think it's a really fun style to watch. It's not something that I would personally be comfortable playing that way of Survivor. It's not a way that I would ever advocate someone to play Survivor, but God, is it really fun to watch? Like, at first, I didn't like – I'll be honest with you guys. And this is probably going to be an unpopular opinion, but I didn't like Tony at all as a player. I was like full team Spencer. I'm like, Spencer, this is how you play Survivor. This kid gets it. This other guy's out of his mind. Now I've come full circle. Like I got the popcorn going and I'm just like, Dominic, this is my guy right here. Like I enjoy Dominic. I like him. I like that he has like the Brian Heidick used car salesman like slime to him. Like I'm into it. I'm like feeling his whole thing. He's somebody that I think actually has a chance to win this season because, you know, as much as he's like in some early hot water, like the guy knows how to schmooze. He knows how to charm. He's going to be aggressive. He's going to, you know, he's already found an idol. He's going to continue to like do more. I think that style can work if you have the charm. I think when the style becomes difficult is when you play that way and you're Russell Hantz and you're abrasive and you're confrontational. But if you play that aggressive style and you still can like kind of like schmooze a little bit, even if some people kind of see through it and think you're full of shit, it's okay. If you can win the majority of them over and play it, it's you can make it happen. You really can.
So Dom, I think, raises a more general question that's interesting, because you brought up the Spencer example, and I think we'd all agree that what you have to do out there is play in a way that aligns with your own abilities and your own personality. And the funny thing about Spencer, at least in his first time, was he wasn't really able to do that. He became so popular despite not playing the game he wanted to play. He wanted to be the strategist of the season, and instead he was the underdog who had to win challenges and try and work his way up the ladder. And then he comes back from Cambodia and is finally able to be in control, and then suddenly in certain places his popularity suffers as a result because people thought maybe, oh, the hype was overblown the whole time. I think Dom is, you can tell that he's enjoying himself out there. He's really playing the game that he wants to play. But on top of that, you also have to play the game that's right for the situation. And I worry that he doesn't really have that off switch. So he's going to play the way that he's playing right now, regardless of what the situation calls for. And so for you, as someone who on your season was, I think, pigeonholed by a lot of people as, oh, this guy is going to be the aggressive strategist and so on. When that is the perception already, what do you have to kind of lean into that? Because if you don't live up to that, people are going to assume it's true anyway and then dock you points for not succeeding at it. Or do you try and like actually adapt to the situation and blend in, even if it's not what is easiest for you to do?
I don't think you have to necessarily play into others' perceptions of you all the time. You can do it on the surface a little bit to kind of understand them and to kind of like keep them, you know, being, you know, giving you what you think is real, honest feedback from them. I don't think Dominic's, how do I phrase this properly? Yeah. I don't think his style is necessarily conducive to winning the game for, even though it's enjoyable all the time. I think for instance, the fact that he like, told people that, hey, I don't have an idol, but here's a fake idol that I made. Like that whole thing was like confusing and odd, but it was who he was. And I don't know. I don't know if you necessarily have to be one pigeonholed archetype the entire game. I think being flexible is very important. I don't know if Dominic has that capability to be anybody else other than himself. And
yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what I see.
I think Dominic would be in the, I may have even used him as the example earlier when I said, like, there are some people who on Ghost Island would just say, I don't care what the downside is. I want the upside. It's going to be worth it in the long run or whatever, regardless of what the situation is back at camp. And it seems like Dominic would be the leading candidate probably to be of that mentality out of this cast. And
certainly risk-seeking, yeah. Certainly,
yeah, for sure, for sure. Like, looking for whatever, wherever the highest upside is, that's where he's going, I think. I think maybe even my favorite just storyline of this season so far involves Dominic and Albert, what you referenced a minute ago, that whole conflict that developed with Chris very early, which then resulted in him making this fake idol to like throw Chris off the scent, which then meant he had to put clue everyone in into the scent that was not Chris. And I've actually been feeling like in rewatching these non-premiere last two episodes, Chris might actually be like my favorite character of the season so far, even though he's not someone who's out there like even coming close to playing the game the way I would be like advising people to be playing. I really do, for whatever reason, find myself really enjoying whatever Chris is doing, whether it's being involved in conflict with Dominic or just off on Ghost Island talking about his own personal life. I think he's actually been one of the most surprising, like really interesting characters of the season so far, but I may be on my own kind of island with that. What have you been thinking about Chris to this point?
So that's kind of funny. And Chris is such an interesting character, I think. And that he's like, it's almost like parody. He's almost like a parody Survivor player where he's so unaware of himself and he's so unaware of how to, you're supposed to, on, you know, the textbook way to play Survivor, that it's almost like it's endearing. Like, you hear him talk and it's like when Angela goes up to him and it's like, hey, they wanted to target me. Instead of him being like, wow, Angela, like, I'm sorry to hear that, and showing like, you know, that he like feels for her, he's like, wow, that means they were just trying to get to me through you. Like, everything's about him in every scenario. He, like, his breakdown with everybody, he's like, yeah, you know, I like you, I like you, I like you, I like myself. Like, he's just like this, like, really, he's like a caricature of like, mm-hmm. this like completely self-involved player, which is like completely the opposite of how you're supposed to play Survivor in today's game. It's about like, you know, maintaining relationships and like all these like, you know, voting blocks and shifting pieces. So he's interesting in a way. It's almost like watching, when you're watching, poker on TV, for instance, when you see like a really, really like complete novice recreational player and they're just like doing silly things, and you're just like, man, I really hope this guy wins this tournament because it'll be really good for poker. It's like that, but for Survivor. You're like, I really hope Chris goes far because it's really good for Survivor, because it's like, it's almost like he's so, God bless him. I mean, he's trying and he's like, his heart's in it, but he's just like, he doesn't have the awareness that you would expect from like, you know, that you're looking from these like savvy, strategic, like, you know, cutthroat players. He's just like, I'm this guy, I'm going to play my game this way. And it's, it's interesting. And it's funny because him and Dom don't get along, but in a lot of ways, they're kind of similar. So it's strange that they're knocking heads, because that would usually be, though, they would be like a buddy tandem, like a total bro group. And it doesn't really make sense to me why they're not getting along based on what I've seen.
Yeah, I loved when Chris gets back on Ghost Island and Angela, having just been blindsided at Tribal, her own alliance has turned on her. She doesn't know where she's at in the game. She's got no friends left. Chris is the only person that she has any connection to. And his immediate reaction is, oh, well, if they did that to you, then they must be coming after me. And it's like, well, right. that's true. But that's really not the point right now. You could say that for a bit later.
Like, how self-absorbed is he? Instead, he didn't spend 1 minute comforting her. He wasn't like, I'm sorry to hear that. He's like, oh, this is definitely about me again. Like, it's just like, it's so unreal, like, how great it is.
Do you think Chris could potentially find himself deep into the game, or do you think it's just a matter of time before his number gets called?
I honestly wouldn't rule it out. And I think that there's like a really interesting shift in the direction of the game. And unfortunately from my side, a lot of the players that I kind of like and am rooting for find themselves on the negative side of the numbers. You know, Brendan's been voted out. This kid, Michael, who I really think is a good player, is now obviously has a real uphill climb. I think Chris and Angela and that faction can actually move forward in the game if him and Dominic just like kind of work things out and mend in those pieces. Like, I think there's some damage control that can be done there. And you'll see that in Survivor sometimes, like, you know, one conversation can kind of shift, you know, these feuding pieces. Like you saw, I think it was last episode where Donathan and Laurel, I think, were talking, and they're like, "Well, who do you like here?" And then Donathan's like, "Well, I kind of like Wendell." And they're like, just on one like easy conversation, they're like, "Well, we should just go this side." Like, I think that Chris, if he can just kind of put aside whatever him and Dom are feuding about, Dominic, I know that he doesn't trust him and all that stuff, but like, if he can see the bigger picture and just like look at the numbers and be like, you know, the Davidi side, we have a complete numbers dominance in this game. Like, we can run this game if we stop trying to like infight with one another. Because the Malolos are like, is not to quote that Sebastian guy, but they're really in a really bad spot. Like, they're the low men on the totem pole right now. Like, they're, you know, the swap happened at a weird time where it was, you know, it broke into, I think it was 5-4 on both sides, if I'm not mistaken. So they can play a really straightforward game of Survivor and then end up with a entire Navidi faction post merge, and then can kind of like, you know, determine which way the power goes. You know, so Chris, if Chris can just like not fight within his own former tribe, he can make a deep run of this game, like, which it's a real thing.
That's something I wanted to ask you about, actually. It has been my impression that Jeff and the producers do not seem in love with how this season ultimately plays out. And one thing I was wondering is if a pagonging may be the reason for that. If we end up with a lot of votes that are just very straightforward. And Albert, this is, of course, something that you guys went through on your season as well, that Upolu team sticking strong all the way down to the final six. If that was, in fact, the case, and if you were to pick one of these players that you see a lot of potential in, like you mentioned Michael, what advice would you be giving to Michael or any just future Survivor players as a pagonging is going on? I think this is a really interesting situation, because it seems like, if that, and again, this is just hypothetical, but if that were to happen this season, it's been a little while since we've seen like an outright one, but we do tend to get some, I would call, like, unexpected winners potentially out of a lot of pagongings. What kind of advice would you have for people not only dealing with the people who they are picking off, but what they should be doing within their own alliance as pagongings are happening?
Yeah, that's a really good point, Colin. And now, as you're saying that statement, I'm like seeing, I kind of like see the writing of the wall, and I kind of agree with you. Like, there should be really, in theory, a straightforward pagonging of like,
yeah, and it's also because to quickly dive into like what we call the edit zone. There have been several mentions, most notably from Kellen, a couple of times of like, wouldn't it be great if we could just stick together and roll through?
Right, right. So they're kind of seeding that idea as like not right. A bad thing. Yeah, I think it could happen. And what I would give advice to players like Michael, who are sharper players, who are looking like they're on the negative side of the pagonging right now, like they're just on a numbers avalanche, is, obviously the most straightforward thing is find the cracks, find the people in the low part of the totem pole. And then you just have to sell fear. You have to sell, threats. You have to sell, negative talking about one another. You have to sell others creating plans and leaving people out. Like, you know, when I watched that last Tribal Council, I was like, and usually the editors don't really like kind of, you know, I can kind of see through the edit pretty clearly at this point for while an episode's going on. The editors kind of had me going a little bit. I thought Michael's thing or plan at Tribal Council was going to work on Sebastian. He looked genuinely like shooken up. Like, he went from being ultra comfortable, like no worries, to like, okay, this is a real thing. And like, if he can sell, you know, it's going to be tough because he already tried to, like, Michael specifically tried to sell this one big bluff and it kind of blew up in his face. But if he can get, like, a little faction of these Malolos and build some, either, you know, find the people in the lower part of the tribe. I don't think he identified the right people, which was one of the problems. I don't really think Sebastian was on the bottom. I think he needs to identify the real people that are being left out of the loop, sell fear to them, and then maybe try to create genuine connections with them. You have time. So, you know, you're still in the pre-merge part of the game. If you can build relationships, win a couple challenges, you know, get people from these early relationships and just see some shifts, I think he can buy himself time to get back into a merge scenario and try to, like, you know, do some damage control or, like, you know, completely just let them know I'm no longer part of this Malolo tribe. I'm part of, like, whatever, you know, tribe designation he's on now, which I don't remember, really remember. But I think you can really you can create some wiggle room if you just sell that fear and sell the direction to the people that are in the middle to bottom portion of these, like, big, like, giant numbered alliances.
Yeah, just quickly, I think Colin touched on something quite important when he pointed out that we're hearing so much this season about the importance of sticking together, of being loyal to your group, and the fact that Kellen gave voice to that, because I think Kellen is someone that we're meant to root for and empathize with and really want to do well in the game. And so for her to just kind of dismiss the idea of flipping or of even trying to sell the outsiders on the idea that they have a chance, either there's a contradiction there, or like that's a style of gameplay that we're meant to endorse this season. Because even with the Malolos, as we move on to that, there's never any suggestion that, oh, well, maybe Steph and Jenna will try to sell out Michael and Brendan or vice versa. It's the four of them are going to sit together and try and work on a plan and execute it as a group. And maybe that's as the game continues to evolve, maybe it's away from voting blocks and back towards something that's a little bit more traditional.
Yeah, it's been really interesting because a lot of times in seasons where you do have swaps, the swaps really wreak havoc on the early season, you know, original tribe designations, on early season alliances. People just are a lot more malleable. I guess we have been hearing and been shown a lot of like early alliances. Like we had, I forget what day the swap happened. I want to say it was like day four, maybe day five, something really early like that.
Right around there, yeah.
Yeah, and it seems like even on that 4 or 5 day pre-swap, you know, time, it's like everyone's like, well, this is where I'm at. This is the people I'm going with. And like, other than like that little shift where like Donathan and Laurel were like, yeah, maybe like we should go with this, you haven't really heard much talk of like anybody making any movement or like shifting in any direction. So maybe that's kind of the direction this game's going. Like maybe it's going to be really straightforward for a period of time. And like those Malolos in the numbers disadvantage are going to try to stick together and pull people. I don't know. I don't really, you know, it's tough to forecast at this point what's going to happen. But you know, I'm rooting for them. I'll tell you that much. As a viewer, I'm rooting. It's kind of unfortunate because a lot of the players that I seem to enjoy, that I kind of picked as people I wanted to see go far, are kind of at a numbers disadvantage. So, I mean, it gives me incentive as a viewer to like kind of root for these people to make something happen, because the people that I tend to like kind of like more on the season are at a numbers disadvantage right now. And I'm not sure if that's an editing thing, because they've sold the people who are in the numbers advantage and kind of like, you know, they've painted Bradley as this guy who's like, you know, easy to hate, you know, pretty much. So, I mean, I'm curious to see how that's going to develop.
Yeah, Bradley, coming into this week, I wasn't sure if people were saying he was this villain ironically, because we really hadn't seen anything from him aside from a few like throwaway comments. But this week he really embraced it and took it to the extreme, and I'm here for it. I love Bradley as a villain. He's one of the most just entertaining characters to root against I think we've seen in a long time. But going back to the Malolos, I think all of us are rooting for them, but we also have some questions about the way they handled this week. And you said you thought that Michael's choice of targets of who to try and flip over to their side maybe wasn't the right one. What do you think the better approach would have been, and how would you go about doing that?
I mean, before I say what I think the better approach would be, I really want to say that was in – I mean, I've seen a pretty fair amount of Survivor. I want to say that was one of the best – if I mean, top 3, 5, I don't know where to rank it, but that was an incredible performance at Tribal Council by Michael. Like his bluff, his delivery, his tonality, like his plan, the fact that he connected James, and like the fact that James had two idols, saying that this idol could be played for two players. Like it's crazy they've never even done that. Like that actually sounds like a good idea, like, or not a good idea, but like something that I could see them do. Yeah. Before I say good idea, yeah, something that I could see them doing, right? Something that they would, you could see production doing. So like his delivery on that was like A+. Like I was like, this is outstanding how good this is. Like, so it's easy for me to play like, you know, armchair quarterback and be like, well, you know, don't target Sebastian is with your pitch. Don't target, I forget who the, I think it was Chelsea was the other person, or, I can't remember who the other.
It was Chelsea, I believe. Yeah.
It was Chelsea maybe. You know, you pick somebody else, but, I don't know what more he really could have done, honestly, like without just being like, do exactly what's perfect. The only thing I think I might have done differently, and I'm not sure if it's a better decision, but I think it's a safer decision, is I think I would have not given the idol to Stephanie. I know his read was that they were going towards Stephanie for whatever reason. I think it's a mistake to not play it for yourself in that spot, only because if the votes did come to Michael, I think he would have, it just would have been a catastrophic mistake to like allow himself to be voted off at that stage, not playing an idol with so little information, unless he had something that we didn't see that made him think it was Stephanie.
When he went up to play it, he still was doing it under the pretense of pretending like this is still good for two people. And he said, and this is something I advocated for forever.
That was,
he said, I'm,
that was amazing. He said, me and Brendan, then he looked at the yes, people for a reaction.
Yeah.
Brilliant. I thought it was absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, I've advocated before, and I wish I had done it more often because I'm really thrilled to see someone do it. Like, you should always do that with the idol. Before you officially play it on anyone, try to get, like, look and see how they're reacting based on how they think you're going to play it. And I'm with you, Albert, that I think this was, like, I have virtually no reservations at this point about saying that I think Michael is an exceptional Survivor player.
Right. I mean, the fact that he's, like, don't even take his age in consideration. I mean, he's 18 years old, but the kid's playing outstandingly well. Like, that part, too, like, the way he delivered it when he said, I'm going to play this for myself and Brendan, looked at them for a reaction, came back. It was, I mean, I'm not going to sit here and say he could have done anything better. I think what he did was, honestly, I don't think I would have, and I consider myself a student of the game, a game player, somebody who's like really creative. I don't think I would have come up with a story that good, honestly. Like, there's and this is he well rested, like fully eaten, like fully, you know, like that was outstanding. So, shy of playing it for himself, I don't know what else he could have done, man. But, I'll tell you this, it was definitely really good television. I'm hoping I'm hoping we get to see more of that from him or from, you know, some of the other players in the game.
Yeah, I love the moxie and the creativity behind it. And you bet that when he stood up there and did that, Jeff's eyes were lighting up. And we don't know how the season's going to turn out for Michael, but I wouldn't be surprised if that move by itself booked his spot on whatever the next returning player season is, because he will be on a lot of people's radar after that. The question, though, I think is, going back to what we were saying about Kellen, like, she made maybe the most important move of the episode, even if it wasn't the most flashy one. When Michael's deciding what to do here, is the right play after all of that simply to not do any of that, not tell his alliance about the idol, not to play it, and just hold that for a future round, hope to survive himself until he gets to another swap or emerge, and then try and make something happen there instead?
You're saying, as from Michael's perspective, when Kellen says we're not budging, should he hold the idol?
I imagine that this wasn't the first time they tried to approach Sebastian and Chelsea. They must have put some feelers out there before Tribal. They weren't biting. No one else was. There's this united front that you're facing down. At that point, do you try and play the odds and get your 1-in-4 chance going, at which point you still need someone else to come over? Or do you say, well, if I'm confident they're not coming after me, I'm just going to hold this and ride this for as long as I can?
No, I think leveraging the power, like, the thing about the idols is so often they're like misused, misshared. I think this was like getting every bit of value that you can from an idol. Like, the way that it was presented and that specific number of 5 versus 4 with that specific backstory of this could be a double idol because James had 2 idols. Like, it was a perfect marriage of so many things. Like, this is a perfect, like, other than, like, people say, like, you know, Kelly Wentworth had the best idol play ever because, yeah, she got all the votes, yada, yada. I think this was like one of, like, it didn't work out because he didn't pick the right person, but I think the way he went about it was as good as you can manage a hidden immunity idol in the game Survivor. It just didn't pan out, which is what's beautiful about this game. You can literally do something almost perfectly or near perfectly and still not work out. Like, that's how sick this game is. It's like, only so much you can do.
No, totally. The issue that I feel like I've seen people taking with the execution here, although generally it does seem like Michael and this whole group are getting a lot of credit, which I think we are all on the same page. They certainly agree. They certainly deserve, is the move to openly say we're putting all of our votes on Bradley. Because if you think about it now, Bradley is, of course, not going to flip because he's just ensuring he leaves. And also everyone else now knows, okay, worst case scenario is Bradley is leaving and not me. And in some context, that could basically be viewed as I'm now free rolling, flushing this idol, assuming they guess wrong with it. And that becomes more of a difficult proposition when you think potentially he can cover 2 people with it. But still, it does feel like announcing essentially that everyone should feel pretty good besides Bradley is not going to do a lot in getting someone to actually flip with you. And along those lines, I got an interesting suggestion sent to me from a good friend of the show, Andre Dean Smith, about potentially saying, like, we're all going to scatter our votes. And if we hit it right, like all of you are at risk. Or maybe there's something to like, we're going to put two of our votes on Bradley and two on one of the other three of you. And if it's a tie, we'll vote Bradley out. But if you just flip your vote and vote for Bradley, then he is definitely going to leave and we'll all be safe. Dom, did you have any thoughts along these lines? Or because I know this is something we talked about many, many years ago when Malcolm had those two idols. If anything from that is particularly relevant, that would be interesting as well.
Yeah, well, that last idea is the one that I was putting out there, because it seems like there are two goals here that are at odds with each other. So if there is someone on the other side who is thinking about flipping, you want them to have an idea of what the plan is. And if they're going to make this big step of flipping on their alliance, making all of these people mad at them, they need to know they need to know what's going to happen. They don't want to just be throwing their vote out there into the void. So they need to know who they're voting for and what's going to happen if everything goes according to plan. On the other hand, you can't just announce, I think, the way that Michael wanted to, okay, it's definitely going to be Bradley, because then everybody out there is free-rolling. They can vote with their alliance,
right?
And then even if the idol is played correctly, then you know it's going to fall on Bradley. So maybe you can split the difference. Maybe you say, we're putting two votes on Bradley and two votes on somebody else. And if you want to guarantee that's not you or someone you care about, the way to do that is to vote for Bradley. And then with you piling your four votes on Bradley, that might be enough to get him out, even if you play the idol on the wrong person, or maybe don't play it at all.
Yeah, that's and it's funny, as you guys are describing this thing, that was I guess that's the finishing touch to the move that he had. And I was trying to figure out in my head, how would I propose that? I think that would have been a good scenario too, to do what we've seen as a new trend in tribal, which is like the whole whispering thing, where like, once you get out this big ordeal that I'm playing the idol, it has two powers, I'm going to save somebody else. I think Michael or somebody might have been, whoever they felt had a good connection with, or the best connection possible with one of those people they were appealing to, and have them walk over and say, listen, this is how we're doing it. Like, vote for this specific person. Trust me on this. You know, kind of like the I think it was a couple seasons ago. Somebody was like, it was like a first or second vote, and the girl was just like, trust me. I think it was on Millennials and Gen X. Was it?
Yeah. Michelle.
Michelle and Millennials Gen X was like, listen, vote this way. Just trust me on this one. Trust me. And like, if you give a trust me vote to one of those people. But yeah, I agree that it was a little heavy by saying we're all voting for Bradley. I think that, I mean, I think you guys are thinking it from a gamer standpoint, and I would think of a gamer standpoint too. So we would think like, yeah, it's a free roll if I save my alliance. I think the people they were appealing to, they thought weren't intelligent enough to put that together. Like, let's call a spade, Sebastian doesn't exactly seem like a rocket scientist.
I think it's imperative.
Like, we have all this power. We're voting for Bradley. Sebastian, if you want to be safe, vote for Bradley. Like, they were doing it in a very like elemental, like very like bare bones way to do it. But I agree that a smarter way to do it would be, hey, we're going to, like what Dom just suggested is perfect. We're going to send two votes to him, two votes to somebody else. If you or somebody you care about doesn't want to be in danger, boom, do this. Or just send somebody.
If Bradley is doing the math, though, I think it's imperative for the person in Bradley's position in here, where you know you're the target of these four votes, but you should have five if everyone stays together. If I'm Bradley here, I am saying, okay, come at me with the votes. That's fine. Everyone else in my alliance, be aware, I'm the one taking the bullet here. You have no reason to flip on it. If this goes wrong, I will be the one to leave. Just stick with this vote.
Right. It, which is probably something that he said and did and that we didn't see on TV.
But. Yeah, I'm guessing that may have happened.
Right.
Yeah, and if he did, I'm not sure they even would have shown it, because apparently Bradley is the devil incarnate and we need to bury him on national TV so that everyone's going to root against him.
Of course. You can't have anything courageous or hero for him right now, because we're building a supervillain here.
Yeah. But Albert, to go back to one of the suggestions that you had for Michael, you said that maybe in his spot you would have played it on yourself instead of for Stephanie. It seems like, though, when he announces ahead of time, I have an idol, if the target's on him already, I don't know if there's a backup plan that's been agreed, or that they maybe had this agreement that if someone reveals an idol and we're voting for them, then the plan B is such and such. But it feels like, if anything, that makes it less likely that the target's going to be him, because someone might not hold their nerve. Someone might flip their vote, or the plan might have to change. So if you're going to reveal it, maybe you have to give it to someone else, and then the question becomes, well, who is that going to be?
Yeah, I mean, that's it's such an interesting thing when it comes to that, like, so often in Survivor, like, the idol passing thing can be a guessing game. Sometimes it's like, you know, on our season, for instance, you know, we had to figure that game when it was 6-6 at the merge. We had to figure out, okay, they have an idol. Who is the least likely person they're going to give it to? And then when you play the who's the least likely, it's like, well, who is the least likely they're going to think? So it's like a he said, she said kind of back and forth. I think that, you know, when he comes out and gives this thing, it's almost like, again, this could be really, like, you know, a little bit too much, like you're thinking it, overthinking it, but like it seems like if somebody does that big gesture, they're going to generally give it away, so they're going to kind of sometimes leave themselves open because it's like they seem like too obvious of a person to play it. Does that make sense? You understand what I'm saying there? Like it seems like too obvious that if I come up with the idol and I say I have two of them, well, you're going to assume that I'm going to use one for me, and then so I'm not going to get votes, so I'm going to give these two away, so maybe they're going to, you know, re-back it at me, assuming I'm going to pass it. It's a big game of chicken sometimes with this idol passing. So I think in that whole, you know, mix, you don't, it's a complete jump ball. It's just, if you're not confident about it and you don't have any information, I think it makes sense to keep it for yourself just in case on rainy day. Cause I mean, even though you're in the tribal or the pre-merge part of the game, it's still an individual game at that point, and you don't have enough information. Like, better safe than sorry, you know, because it's if they assume he's passing both, he gets voted out. He goes from a guy who made an incredible play to like, oh, he's – what a dumb move by giving his idol away. Like, it's almost like – and now he's out of the game, and now it's like, you know, you're out so early. So I don't know. That was something that I discussed with a good friend of mine who watches Survivor, who really think – you know, he knows the game really well, and he's like, I think he should have kept it for himself, and I kind of agreed when he told me that. So I don't know. That's what makes the game great, though. We can still sit here and discuss this, and nobody still knows what the perfect.
Yeah, well, that almost sounds like the mentality that as poker players you try to inoculate yourself against, where like, oh, I'm afraid of embarrassing myself or making the play that looks bad. When in reality, I don't know that the outcome of he plays it on himself and it's actually Stephanie versus he plays it on Stephanie, it's actually himself. Maybe he gets a few more days to scramble and do his thing or get bailed out by a twist, but it probably ends up the same way. And yeah, the ultimate difference is he looks like an idiot, and the casual fan who isn't thinking through all this stuff is going to say, oh, what a klutz, he should have played it on himself. Well, but
I think the critical distinction there, Dom, though, is if I make a decision wrong at the poker table, oh, well, I can rebuy now, whereas I have just lost my one opportunity of my lifetime.
Right, but that's that idea of if I make this wrong, I can rebuy. Firstly, for a lot of forms of poker, that's just not true. Like, if you're playing the World Series main event, like, you can't think that way. But also, I think the mentality you're supposed to have, and I'm saying this to two professional poker players, so correct me if I'm wrong, but I thought the mentality is meant to be, like, I'm treating this as one long session, but I treat these decisions in isolation, and it shouldn't make any difference if I'm up however many dollars, I'm down however many dollars, if I'm 12 hours in, if I'm 10 minutes in. Like, you should be having the same balanced mentality throughout. And I think
you got to think of your Survivor life as like your tournament life, essentially.
That's exactly That's exactly what I was saying. I would liken this to tournament poker, not cash game poker. So the only value there would be him. He's protecting his tournament life by playing it on himself, where he can't be eliminated. That's the only thing. And even though he'd be short, like you said, have a couple days of scramble. Yeah, that's like being short stacked in a tournament, but that doesn't mean he's out, right? Sure. So it's 100% from. I don't think it's an embarrassment standpoint. I would agree with you. That's not really something that you should be basing your decisions on. Like, will I look bad if this goes poorly? It's more, will this end my game? And ending the game is like, you know, risk of ruin is a huge factor in Survivor.
Right. You're opening the door for your equity to immediately hit zero, whereas you are shutting that door by idling yourself.
To me, it seems like it's not like a ladder, it's more like a pyramid, where every level you goes up, it becomes less and less likely. So like, if I'm thinking that you're thinking that I'm thinking this and so on, you can keep going in those circles, but you know the majority of the time is just going to be the level one play, and then if you're thinking one step above that, that's going to be good enough the vast majority of the time, except if you're facing someone who's as good as you, in which case you have to just keep going up and hope that you end up in the right place. If you're on the Naviti side then, how do you handle this? Because we saw this conversation where this group huddle, where the group all comes together and we hear Chelsea and Desiree talk for the first time this season. And it seemed like they were the ones who were driving the vote in this direction. And it's still unclear if they are actually more influential in that group than we've ever seen, or they're less influential than that and they just had to show something, so we got one scene of them just talking, just saying words, and that's what we get for that conversation. But Chelsea, I think, almost accidentally hits on the right move where she says, we should go for one of the guys because Milono will think we'll want to keep the tribe strong, and so the next level is we vote off one of the strong guys. And so she's displaying that kind of going up in levels attitude, but it's maybe not for the same reasons that other people would say that, because the standard move nowadays seems to be, well, vote for the weak person who's least likely to have the idol, and usually that's one of the least athletic women on the tribe, so you see that that's a tendency in merge boots now. But then if on a tribe of super fans who all know their history, well, you outthink that by going back to, we'll just vote off one of the strong guys. And Albert, if you can give the context here, it seems kind of like that's what you guys are doing in South Pacific, where it's like, well, the level two play might be, oh, we'll go for Whitney, we'll go for someone else, but then the step above that is we'll go for Keith.
Right. No, that's definitely what you described there, spot on with the decision making pyramid. Like, it's like when you're leveling up, like most people are going to default to the level one play. Then you look across the fence, you're like, okay, are they thinking how I'm thinking? And then you adjust accordingly. It's funny you mentioned that, Dom, because when Chelsea spoke, I was excited from an editing standpoint. I'm like, oh man, she might get booted now. Like, I was like, this is good. Like, we just heard from her out of nowhere. Yeah. I was like, she visibility spike discussing strategy. I was like, this makes no sense. Like, this isn't a strategic voice at all. This might be our boot here. Like, our Malolo underdogs might have a chance. Sadly, I was mistaken there. The editors, kudos to the editors there. But, I think it's interesting how, you know, and I'm not sure how many of the players on the season are super fans, because we haven't heard from so many voices yet. I didn't read all the bios in depthly, but I think the play that they made in terms of going for the play of going for the level three, going up for like that dangerous guy, is something that I think puts you in a bad situation, because I don't think you really want to lose immunity challenges pre-merge, regardless whether you think you're in, unless you think you have this complete lock on the other side. I just think it's a really suboptimal decision to put yourself at a numbers disadvantage on a tribe that's been swapped, because I just think it's smarter to win. I'd rather win with a group and see how my tribe maybe meshes in a different way than I originally thought, than necessarily vote out these guys because it's a non-traditional thing. And I'm so confident about this alliance that I had for 4 days. I just think that they're missing the mark a little bit there. And I think that, they should be approaching it more in a level one way. It's like, let's get out the weaker, less threatened or less, monumental players. And let's play a game that's, let's play that old school game. I still think there's value in playing that level one game now, yeah, from where they're at.
Yeah. And Brendan, I'm sure, would have been a big help for them going forward in the challenges. Brendan, this will probably be meaningful for Dom and Dom only, but we both recently watched this documentary about these like hardcore, insane 100-plus mile marathons through like backwoods Tennessee that people, like 90% of the people who ever try it can't even finish it. And I would believe you if you told me Brendan had finished the Barkley marathons. Google that documentary and watch it. Quick sidebar. But Albert, I'm curious to hear what you have to say as someone who has potentially been through this yourself, just being out there on Upolu as one of the stronger guys. Just the modern state of playing Survivor. You didn't have to do it in a season with swaps, but particularly in seasons with swaps and being someone who is probably just viewed as a big physical threat from, whether it's being the leader on your team or now you've swapped and now you're the leader of the opposition, what goes into playing from that position in Survivor. And if you feel like, frankly, there's anything that like the Brendan type could have done to get through this situation.
Yeah. It's so funny because as I'm watching this season with Ghost Island, I see this guy, Brendan, and a lot of times you see this like, you know, alpha male archetype on the show, and they do the dumbest things, like kind of like our boy Chris is doing, where, you know, the way they speak, the way they present themselves, they're just like, they're like a bull in a china shop, right? They can't help themselves. But Brendan, I thought, was a really interesting guy because, yes, Brendan looks like he could run that you know, that marathon you just talked about, or that insane challenge, because he's at, you know, like, it's, you know, the guy's a physical specimen. But his language, and that's something I mentioned early on, he was really, you know, and I think somebody, it might have been our supervillain Bradley, said that, you know, he's annoying, or he talks like a dad. I couldn't disagree with him more. Every snippet that I heard, the way he described, you know, the group decisions, the way he spoke to people, his interpersonal communication skills were like from what I heard, were like near perfect in Survivor. So it's tough to be that physical role. And like, he obviously got a, you know, for him, when in the first episode, when they're like, choose a leader, and he was chosen as a leader, that's, you know, that's usually kind of like a bad sign in Survivor. Like, you don't want to be pointed out as like, this is our leader type guy, but it's a hard place to play the game from. You just have to present yourself and how you deal with people differently. And I think Brendan, honestly, if the swap doesn't happen and the game plays a little differently, despite him being this like super obvious, you know, alpha leader type guy, I actually think he could have been the rare person to win the game while still looking like that, like kind of a Jeremy Collins guy, where it's like, dude, this guy's, you know, freaking Superman shape. Everybody likes him, but he somehow finds a way to win the game because he's likable, and he's socially aware enough to like not make himself a target. It's like, I think you can do that. You just have to be like, kill everyone with kindness, but not in a disingenuous way, in a way that like, you know, people feel empowered by you. And I thought that's what was good about Brendan. It's maybe because his background as a coach, but it seemed like he was very inclusive in all the conversations I heard him have and all the interactions I heard him kind of like, they showed on screen. It's like, he was never demanding. He was never barking orders. He was never like, we're doing this. He was like, or I think this should be done. He was always like, you know, what do we think here? Like, how does this affect us? It was very inclusive. It was very us mentality. It was very soft and calm. And I think that's the way to play the game if you're going to be an alpha guy who everyone's going to look to. You know, it's a harder way to play the game if you're, you know, maybe one of the like, the, you know, quieter non-athletic girls, because people don't quote unquote respect them for their game or whatever. But if you're that guy, I think that's how you have to play the game.
Yeah, Bradley might not like him, but I'm not sure who Bradley does like, and I'm not sure who likes Bradley. So I don't think he's in any spot to be dishing out insults there. But everyone else seemed to genuinely really like Brendan, and it obviously sucks for him, who I think he said he first applied back in Marquesas or thereabouts, and he's been going through the process and dreaming of this for 15 years now. And so to come on and go out after 12 days, it's got to be heartbreaking. But at the same time, if you have to go out, then going out, you know, he didn't really make any mistakes from what we could see. He didn't last long enough in the game to make any mistakes or make any decisions that he'll be haunted by himself. And he leaves with his entire tribe being in love with him, and most of the viewers loving him too. If you have to go out that early, that it's not a bad way to go.
Yeah, right. especially when we've seen Jeff Probst like fall in love with the Andrew Savage types over the years. It wouldn't shock me if Brendan got a second shot on Survivor and comes back with like amazing meta for his second time around, where everyone just feels like they can fully trust him because he never had to screw anyone over.
Right. And he's like, it's funny, he's like an old school, he's like Colby Donaldson. Like, this guy's like, you know, this is like the guy that like in 15 years ago, he would have been like the fan favorite of the season. It would have been like, this is our guy. People would be naming their children after him and stuff like that, you know? Well, so it's interesting how the game evolves to like, now that's like an early boot. Like, let's get him out of the way. Like, it's crazy how the game changes.
Yeah. I really enjoyed Brendan on this season, Albert. I know you mentioned near the top of the show that you also like Brendan and hated to see him go so early. Who else from this season are you finding yourself liking that we haven't talked a whole lot about?
That we haven't talked a lot about. I think Wendell might have a little bit of game to him. I haven't really seen enough of him, but I think he's got a little bit of the, I don't think he's a super fan per se. I'm not sure how much he knows about the game, but I think he's somebody who, based on how people are reacting to him, might be likable enough to go a little farther in the game. I think Stephanie has the makings of being a good player. Stephanie, I was a little disappointed by the way she dealt with when they got kind of stonewalled and it was down 5-4 and she was just kind of like drawing hope in the sand and like kind of giving up. I thought she would be more of a gamer than that, but I still think she has you know, something to her. She seems like she knows the game. She seems like she can turn on that charm card. And I think we saw in like the preview that our good man, Dr. Rocket Scientist Sebastian might have been flirting with her, if I'm not mistaken, or was it somebody else? So hopefully she can turn on that charm.
We've seen Coach draw lines in the sand very effectively before. Are there any pointers that you give her at all?
That's true. She took a page from my boy Coach Wade's book about drawing lines in the sand. Anybody else? Let me see if there's somebody else that I.
How about like Laurel or James? Those are my answers to people. When I was thinking earlier about like who from this season I would want to align with, and those two jumped off the page for me, and I thought they may for you as well.
I think James. I mean, James is somebody I would definitely want to align with. I don't think James. I don't know if he's going to have the. I don't think he's going to be personable enough to go into to do really well in the game. It's a little robotic for me.
We call it management consultant syndrome.
That's exactly right. That's exactly what he seems like. I don't know if he has that pizzazz. I think he's just kind of like. I think he's a guy who's going to float. You know, kind of into the middle, deep section of the game. Laurel's interesting. I don't know what Laurel has. Laurel's a wild card. I think Laurel can have some game. I don't know how she and her little connection with Donathan fit. And it's going to be interesting because it depends on what direction they go. They're kind of like that swing vote right now, and the swing votes have a lot of power in Survivor. So I don't know where her game's going to go. I'm curious to see it because I guess she actually plays a big role because depending on what direction she goes, it could dictate the entire season. So
go ahead. Yeah, we haven't seen a ton from Laurel to this point, but what we have seen, I think she looks really sharp and comes across well on TV, and like she has certainly a solid enough head on her shoulders as things pertain to the game. So Albert, actually, one thing I wanted to ask you about, we've seen Eric Reichenbach early on in a lot of the promos and also very quick, a few seconds into this season premiere, his famous scene of him giving up the immunity necklace. And I'm wondering if we'll see that again later on, potentially. I'm also wondering if it has crossed your mind that we might potentially see Brandon give up the immunity and that you might make another appearance on Survivor.
Yeah, it's really funny. I've been asked that a lot now that this season came up with this particular theme about the mistakes. And I've had friends be like, you know, it's funny. They always bring up the Eric Reichenbach, but nobody really brings up Brandon giving his necklace to you. I don't know. I don't know if it's, you know, there's something there. One of my friends has a theory. He's like, listen, Brandon Hance was such a train wreck on that show that I think they're just trying to wipe him from the history books. Like, they just don't want.
That's my theory as well.
Like, they just don't want to associate themselves with him because he's been obviously the way his story on that show ended was just so cringeworthy that, you know, that kind of whole thing. And for my own, you know, just speaking candidly with you guys, from my own stuff where I go back and I revisit, you know, the things I may have done differently. I know that when my scenario happened, when Brandon gave me that immunity necklace and he got voted off and I kept it, I know they wanted me to give them that, you know, what Parvati gave him, which was like, he just made the dumbest move ever in Survivor, right? Like, they wanted that, like, juicy soundbite of me, like, dancing on his grave type deal. And at the time, that was the first time in my entire – I played 39 games, days of Survivor. That was the only day that I was ever in, like, any kind of real, like, jeopardy of going home. And I got a guy to give me the necklace and then he got voted off. Like, I was like in like shock. I was like, what the hell just happened? Like, I was like, I felt like I was in an airplane and my plane was about to go down and I thought I was going to die. And next thing I know, I like landed perfectly on like some like dessert. Like, it's just like, I was like, I can't even believe the sequence of events that led to me like not dying here.
Yeah. So landed perfectly on Brandon Hance's dead body.
Yeah. And like, it was unreal. And I know I still, the game at that point had kind of gotten to me a little bit where I was like, I felt for him on a human level, you know? So I didn't want to like, I was like, man, this poor kid, even though he has some tendencies where he flies off the handle, he's, you know, I kind of felt for him a little bit. So I didn't give production that like man, I really got him there. You know, like I wasn't in that headspace on that particular day. You know, which is unusual because I went into this game like I'm going to play this ferocious, like cutthroat game. And I was like, if you told me before the game that scenario would happen, I would have told you, oh, can't wait to hear like the confessionals I'm going to give. I'm going to completely roast this kid. And I just didn't give him that. So I think that it was, you know, on my season, it wasn't portrayed like you didn't hear me giving that confessional. It wasn't like sold like that. It wasn't even really visited as like me making this great move. It was like, oh, poor Brandon, like, did this thing, and then, like, he got voted off. So,
and then the necklace falls off your neck, and you have to pick it up, and there's, like, this clang in the background. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, the necklace falls, you hear, like the background radio, like, sound, and it's just, like, it's, like, so bad. But, oh, man.
I still think, from time to time, like, I think you're right that they're trying to airbrush him out of Survivor history at this point, but part of me still thinks about if he doesn't do that and he goes on to win and like Savai and Sophie and people are voting for him to win and give him $1 million, and he's the last person you should be giving $1 million to. So a lot of Brandon Hans in the headlines at that point, I'm guessing. It becomes considerably harder to write him out of history at that point, and it makes me wonder what the franchise would look like nowadays.
Oh, yeah. Dr. Phil definitely would have another Survivor winner guest as a, if Brandon would have won that $1 million, man. I don't even want to know what would happen.
We've said before, like, Sophie's, it seems like, brings up all the time that she would still love to have seen Brandon win that season. Like, can't stop mentioning how close he was to winning and that people really liked him out there. And I think that's something that just goes so totally overlooked by the vast, vast, vast majority of Survivor viewers, like just how close we were to Brandon Hance at age 19 or 20 being a Survivor winner.
Oh my gosh. That's what makes this game so incredible. It's like you watch the show, you know who the person is, and he could have won that season. He had like a realistic chance of winning that season. This isn't like something we're fabricating. It's so crazy, but it's so true.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, in general, not only not recognizing just how good of a chance Brandon Hance had. I'm sure, Albert, you have noticed over the years that, at least as far as I've been able to tell, most people who watch the show don't even seem to factor in variance as like one part of the game, when I think realistically, just sheer variance, aka just like luck in Survivor, plays a pretty sizable role on any given season.
Oh, without question. Like, you know, I was discussing this, you know, I was in Vegas last week, and I was you know, meeting with my friend who I told you guys was being considered for the show, and I was discussing that with him because we finished Cow Wrong, and you know, not to dog Michelle Fitzgerald and her win or everything, but you know, there's a lot of things that happen in a season of Survivor that create a win, and very so infrequently. I think I've said this on this podcast before, but so infrequently does the best player of a season win the season. Mm-hmm. Or even the second best sometimes. And
right. That's a very common misconception that whoever wins is automatically the best player because they accomplished the goal.
Right, right. And that's, not to take anything away from the person that wins each individual season. Whoever won the season generally did a couple things well or a few things well enough to win. And, you know, usually, I mean, I can't really think of many seasons where a winner played a bad season, but that doesn't necessarily mean that, hey, you won the game, you played the best. Like, that's far from true. I would say that there's actually a very, I would say more seasons than not have a winner who was not the best player that season. And that's okay, because there is supposed to be variance. There's supposed to be a little bit of luck, and there's supposed to be an unpredictable nature to it. And that's what makes the game so great and so complex, because, you know, so many little things can affect the game in an exponential way. And, you know, that's what makes the game so difficult, because right. It's you can play perfectly and lose. So many of the best games and the things that I personally in my life have always been drawn to are games like that, where you can do everything perfectly and you still have to swallow the idea that, hey, like, that's it. That's all I can do. You know, that's how poker is. That's how baseball is. That's how Survivor is. That's how so many of the best games that to me are the most interesting are. And that's why you have to respect the game so much.
Yeah. And, it, you know, to be the front runner, to be the best player on a given season, is okay, instead of the roughly 5% equity that an average player is going to have, you have what, like 15, maybe 20% equity to win the season. And furthermore, once we've done this 36 times, it would be almost mathematically impossible not to have a few fluke winners by now.
Without question, yeah. It's a friend of mine has a theory about poker tournaments where it's like when you enter a poker tournament, it's kind of like a lottery, right? And the difference is when you're a bad player, you might have one or two lottery tickets or one or two tickets in the lottery. When you're a better player, you might have 10 or 12 or 15 tickets, right? But right. At the end of the day, it's still a lottery. There's still variance and luck and chance. It's the same thing, you know, you just described with equities. It makes it really interesting because like right now, even as I'm doing this, podcast with you guys, I was thinking like, what if, if they asked me, who do you think is going to win the season? I would have no answer for you guys right now because like, it's just like, there's so many ways the season could play out. And a lot of the players that I thought would be like, really powerhouse type players are kind of gone or players that I thought could really play well. So it's a toss up, which makes it really interesting because there's so many, right now there's like seven people who could probably win this game. And that's kind of interesting, right?
Yeah. This is the part where I was going to ask who your winner pick was, but I'll cross that question off. Who do you think is looking good though? Who are the six or seven people you think are in contention to win?
Okay. So if pressed here, all right, let me think about this. Yeah. Yeah. Let me think about, okay, I'm gonna open with Dominic because, as we stated earlier, even though he's playing like this Tony like kind of wild, high energy, very high, very volatile, high variance game, I think he can do it. I think he can pull it off with his social skills and his just the way he's gonna approach the game. I think he's very possible. I think Stephanie as an underdog can pull this off from the bottom. Something about her makes me think that. This is like the kind of person that can do it. I think, let's see, my two of my biggest winner picks are gone, so it's really sad. Okay, Michael, I can't discount Michael, even though it looks like he's in a bad situation right now. The kid's got game. The kid's really good. If he catches a break and can work himself into a decent footing into this game. He has every bit of a survivor winner's makings. Kellen is an interesting underdog story. The way we're being shown her kind of edit where she's overcome all these things in her life and she's like, I got divorced and I started my life over and I'm doing this whole thing. I'm seeing a little bit of like a Sophie-esque kind of like presentation of how they're trying to present her to us as viewers. So that's interesting to me. Chris would be a really polarizing winner, but I can't discount him. I can't discount him at this point. And if I had to add one more person, I think Wendell maybe be like an underdog type winner. I think Bradley's too much of a villain, but I don't know. They could surprise us and give us this like really hated, like vitriol winner in Bradley, which would be really interesting.
Yeah, maybe they dislike the season and decide to just lean into it as hard as they can, like the producer's style. Where they're trying to get the show canceled now because they don't want to keep making it.
They're just hammering us with it. And Laurel, you know what? I'm not gonna discount Laurel. We've had low visibility winners before in the first couple episodes, so I'm not gonna discount Laurel. I poorly tried
to allude to that kind of possibility earlier when I was saying certain seasons where you have pagonging sometimes have pretty under the radar winners. And I was thinking specifically of both Sophie early on and also Natalie White early on. I don't think it's outside the realm of possibility at all. Like if this is a pagonging where one big group just sticks together, that it is someone that's a little under the radar to this point, potentially winning still.
That's a great correlation. That makes sense. Yeah. Cause that kind of lines up with what we're seeing. There's a high chance for pagonging. So that usually means high chance for a low visibility early winner. So,
right.
Yeah. Okay, yeah. I like that.
Yeah. And maybe that's certainly not hard science, but that's just a Colin Stone theory at this point. Albert, we know you are up against the clock. We thank you so much for taking so much time with us today. Is there anything else you wanted to get out there or anything you want to plug while you're out here?
No, nothing to plug today. Just glad that you guys had me on. I'm excited to watch this season. I've been, fan of this podcast since you guys first had me on. So many years ago. So glad to see where you guys are with it now. I always recommend it to anybody that's like starting to delve into Survivor. So just glad to chat with you guys again today, man. Really happy to be able to speak.
Yeah, no, Albert, I mean, since the beginning of this podcast, I've always thought of you as someone who was tremendously important in just helping get us on the map. You were our second ever guest that we ever interviewed about their experience on the show. And then Cochran heard you, and then Sophie heard that, and we really honestly peaked like 6 months into this whole thing, and it's just been going downhill for the last 6 years or so. But we thank you for making all of that possible and for taking the time with us today. All right. Well, Albert, you were on Twitter at 0_votes. Where's the underscore? Is there an underscore?
Yes, yes. So it's the words 0_votes. That's my Twitter, Instagram, all that good social media stuff. I have named myself the honorary leader of Team No Votes at the Final Tribal Council. Hoping to see if I can add another player.
There've got to be like 20 shutout finalists at least by now.
We have a pretty quality squad. Go through our roster one of these days. We have some impressive names on that list. So I'm pretty proud to be a member.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much once again for coming on with us. Always a treat getting to hear from you. Definitely do come talk to us sometime soon for sure. Until next week, he is on Twitter at DomHRV. I am at Colin Stone. You can email the show, domandcolin@gmail.com. Of course, BB10 rolling along on the Patreon feed. If you're interested in that, patreon.com/domandcolin. I'm sure we will talk to you very soon. Enjoy the episode Wednesday night. Take care, everybody.